Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak for Wednesday, January 16th, 2019. Coming up this hour,
Theresa May's Brexit bill suffers a crushing defeat.
China once again steps up stimulus measures.
Calls for patience from the Federal Reserve get louder.
Shares of Snap slump after the latest executive departure.
And the parade of bank earnings continues with results from Goldman and Bank of America.
Attorney General nominee Barr says he doesn't think the special counsel's investigation is a witch hunt. Plus, Governor Cuomo's plan to make pot legal in the state. I'm Michael Barr. More ahead.
I'm John Stashower in sports. Good win for the Rangers. They beat Carolina at the Garden. The Islanders an overtime win over St. Louis. The Devils lost in Columbus.
That's all straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak on Bloomberg 1130 New York, Bloomberg 99.1 Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 1061 Boston, Bloomberg 960 San Francisco, Sirius XM 119, and around the world on BloombergRadio.com and via the Bloomberg Business app.
Good morning, I'm Karen Moscow.
I'm Nathan Hager. Bloomberg Daybreak brought to you by Sector Spider ETFs. Why buy a single stock when you can invest in the entire sector? Visit sectorspdrs.com or call 1-866-SECTOR-ETF.
And U.S. futures and global stocks painting a mixed picture this morning, 5:01 on Wall Street. And we check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures are up 6 points, Dow futures up 58, NASDAQ futures little changed. The DAX in Germany is little changed as well. CAC in Paris up 0.25%, and the FTSE 100 down 0.6%. Nikkei 225 in Japan was down 0.6%, and the Hang Seng in Hong Kong gained 0.25%. 10-year Treasury down 6/32, the yield 2.73%, yield on the 2-year 2.53%. NYMEX crude oil down 0.4%, or 23 cents, to 51 $1.88 a barrel. COMEX gold up 0.1%, up $1.10 to $12.89.50 an ounce. The euro $1.1409 and the yen 108.63. Nathan.
Karen, the UK stands at its most dangerous crossroads in decades after Parliament rejected Prime Minister Theresa May's Brexit plan.
It is clear that the House does not support this deal, but tonight's vote tells us nothing about what it does support.
The more than 200 vote defeat effectively kills May's agreement with the EU, while opposition leader Jeremy Corbyn now tries to force an election.
The government has lost the confidence of this House and this country. I therefore, Mr. Speaker, inform you I have now tabled a motion of no confidence in this government.
A no-confidence vote in May's leadership scheduled for today could trigger a general election.
Financial markets are taking the news in stride, with investors saying May's defeat opens a door for a second referendum on Brexit. Dartmouth professor and former Bank of England member Danny Blanchflower.
I think it does take away the option of just crashing out. I think they have to defer, they have to delay. The prospects of a second referendum are rising, and I think the prospects of no Brexit at all are rising. What are the options on the table? Some kind of Brexit deal where the people lose, a crash out where they lose even more, as compared to not leaving.
Even after the Prime Minister's massive defeat, the EU says there is no room to renegotiate. That has the pound trading near its strongest level since November at $1.2873.
Now, it was a muted trading session in Asia today, but we did see a big move from China, with the country's central bank injecting a record $83 billion into the financial system. Bloomberg's Juliet Sally reports.
The PBOC injected the most amount of liquidity on record through its open market operations a day after vowing larger tax cuts. Analysts saw the injection as a move to shore up cash in the system ahead of an expected run on the banks in the lead up to tax season and Lunar New Year. In Singapore, I'm Juliet Sally, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Juliet, thank you. Here in the U.S., calls for patience on Federal Reserve policy are getting louder. Bloomberg's John Tucker joins us live with the details. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Karen. We're hearing similar messages from both doves and hawks on the Fed.
Will we actually raise interest rates twice? I don't know. It's going to depend on what the data actually comes out. Could it be more? Could it be less? You know, we'll have to see.
Minneapolis President Neil Kashkari remains a dove, though he doesn't vote on policy this year. But Kansas City President Esther George, a noted hawk, preached patience in remarks yesterday, calling for a pause before considering additional rate increases. Dallas Fed President Robert Kaplan had a similar message, saying the central bank should take its time. Still, he's not ready to call an end to the hiking cycle. John Tucker, Bloomberg Daybreak.
And John, thanks. And the Fed's next read on the U.S. economy comes today with the release of the Beige Book. Bloomberg's Michael McKee reports.
The Beige Book may get more attention on Wall Street than usual. The government shutdown means there's no official data on retail sales, inventories, and growth. So the Fed's survey of regional economic conditions will be scrutinized for evidence the economy is hanging in there. Investors will be particularly keen to divine the state of the shopper, given poor results from some of the country's biggest retailers, and they want to know whether tight labor markets are pushing prices higher. Michael McKee, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Michael, thank you. The parade of bank earnings continues today with results from Bank of America and Goldman Sachs. Here with a look at Goldman's report is Bloomberg's Jeff Bellinger.
Goldman's revenue and earnings likely trailed the company's largest peers. Bloomberg Intelligence says legal risk associated with the one MDB scandal and the potential impacts on capital returns will likely be the central focus with the fourth quarter results. But markets got off to a stronger start in 2019, and an improved outlook could be more meaningful than a difficult fourth quarter. Jeff Bellinger, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Jeff, thanks. Shares of Snap are down more than 8% in early trading after the company's chief financial officer resigned. Sarah Fryer has details from the Bloomberg 960 newsroom in San Francisco.
The company has lost a number of folks since its March 2017 IPO, including heads of strategy, engineering, product, legal. Most of the people who report to Evan Spiegel have left or been fired, and that raises a lot of questions around this company's future.
Chief Financial Officer Tim Stone leaves Snap after just 8 months on the job.
Eddie Lampert has won a bankruptcy auction for Sears. Sources tell Bloomberg the Sears chairman's plan keeps the bankrupt retailer in business and seeks to save tens of thousands of jobs. Lampert's bid beat competing proposals that would have forced Sears to shut down and liquidate.
Renault is putting together plans to remove Carlos Ghosn as chairman and CEO. Bloomberg News has learned the French automaker's board will meet in the coming days to replace him. Ghosn failed to win bail this week. He faces a lengthy incarceration in Japan. S&P futures up nearly 6 points now. Dow futures up 57 points. NASDAQ futures little changed. Price of the 10-year down 6/32. The yield 2.73%. This is Bloomberg. And it's 5:07 on Wall Street. Time for the latest world and national news, courtesy of Bloomberg's Michael Barr.
Thank you very much, Nathan. President Trump's pick for Attorney General says he knows Bob Mueller. During William Barr's confirmation hearing on Capitol Hill yesterday, he told the Senate Judiciary Committee that he will protect the special counsel's investigation. Bloomberg's Bob Moon reports.
Barr is halfway through his 2 days of questioning, and he's used the hearings to assert his independence as President Trump's nominee. He pledged to give Robert Mueller the time he needs to finish his probe and disagreed with Trump's frequent characterization of the investigation.
I don't believe Mr. Mueller would be involved in a witch hunt.
At the same time, he said that would be a natural reaction for someone who felt they were falsely accused. He said he's troubled by the idea of prosecutions of political opponents.
I don't subscribe to this locker-up stuff.
Although Barr doesn't need Democratic votes to win confirmation, he may get some. I'm judging by early reviews, and there's no sign any Republicans are wavering on backing him. Bob Moon, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Unpaid federal employees failed to win a temporary court order compelling the government to compensate them for working during the partial shutdown or let them take jobs elsewhere. Prosecutors say Paul Manafort misled special counsel Robert Mueller's investigators and a federal grand jury when he said he wasn't communicating with people in the Trump administration as he was under investigation. Kenyan security forces ended an attack on an office complex in the capital by suspected Islamist militants that left 14 people dead. Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta.
We will continue taking every step to make our nation inhospitable to terrorist groups and their networks.
Kenyatta says all of the assailants were killed in Nairobi. New York Democratic Senator Kirsten Gillibrand announced she's taking a first step toward formally running for the White House in 2020.
I'm filing an exploratory committee for President of the United States tonight.
Gillibrand on CBS's The Late Show with Stephen Colbert says she, quote, will fight for other people's kids as hard as I would fight for my own. Governor Andrew Cuomo unveiled a plan to make New York the 11th state to legalize recreational pot for adults. During his annual State of the State address, Cuomo says retail sales of the drug would raise an estimated $300 million a year. Cuomo also unveiled a proposal banning stretch limousines from state roads. It comes after 20 people were killed in October after a stretch SUV lost control and slammed into another vehicle in Schoharie. Cuomo also called on the state legislature to revamp the leadership of the MTA and called for sports betting to be legal in four upstate casinos within 100 days. Global News, 24 hours a day, on air and at TikTok, on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Thanks, Michael. Nearly 5:10 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update with John Stashower.
Nathan, it's a young Rangers team. They figured to have bad stretches like they've had lately, six losses in seven games. But last night, their first win at the Garden since December 18th. A 6-2 rout of Carolina. Three Rangers scored two goals, including Mika Zibanejad.
I think we played faster, played simpler. Scored on the power play. Took advantage of the chances we had, and still maybe not as good as the Islanders game. That was a good response from the guys.
Went 3-for-3 on the power play. The New York team that has been playing well, the Islanders, more the same last night.
Islanders will keep control of the puck. Dunn able to sneak off as Filppula back in. Valtteri Filppula, he scores!
The call, 2-1 overtime over St. Louis, and the Isles have won 9 of the last 11. Devils lost at Columbus 4-1. The Nets will get a good look tonight at the NBA's hottest player. They're in Houston. James Harden has scored 30 or more in 17 straight games. He just went for 57. The Knicks are in London. They'll play Washington there tomorrow. Last night, two-time defending champion Golden State served notice. In Denver, the Nuggets were in first place in the West. The Warriors then scored 51 in the first quarter and won going away, 142-111. Philadelphia last night with an 83-point first half, a 149-107 rout of Minnesota. The Jets appear to have their man, Greg Williams, close to a deal to be the new defensive coordinator. Last year in Cleveland, he ended up as the Browns' interim head coach, had a winning record in that job. Francis Tiafoe, 20-year-old from outside of D.C., with an upset win at the Australian Open, beating the fifth seed, Kevin Anderson. With the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update, I'm John Stashower. Nathan?
All right, John, thank you. Futures pointing to a modestly higher open on this Wednesday morning on Wall Street. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. Coming up on 512 on Wall Street, after May's historic defeat on Brexit, what next? We check in with Bloomberg News executive editor Heather Harris in London, and Christina Hooper of Invesco joins us as well. This is Bloomberg.
Global News, 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at TikTok on Twitter. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. Stocks in Europe are climbing alongside U.S. stock index futures as investors assess prospects for policymakers to arrest a slowdown in global growth. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures up 7.5 points, Dow futures up 76, NASDAQ futures up 6, the DAX in Germany's up 0.25%, 10-year Treasury down 6/32nds, yield 2.73%, yield on the 2-year 2.54%, NYMEX crude oil's down 0.5% or 29 cents to $51.83 a barrel. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Karen. President Trump's attorney general nominee says he would not bow to pressure if he was asked to fire special counsel Robert Mueller. William Barr told senators he didn't consider the investigation a witch hunt. Barr faces more questions today. Congress is planning to skip next week's planned recess if the partial government shutdown continues. In the NHL, the Islanders won in overtime. The Rangers won. The Devils lost along with the Capitals. NBA action, the Warriors won. Global News, 24 hours a day, on air and at TikTok, on Twitter. Powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Michael, thank you. Coming up on 519 on Wall Street, live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak. We're joined from our London Bureau this morning by Bloomberg News Senior Executive Editor Heather Harris. Heather, I guess the morning, number of the morning is 230, the number of votes that Theresa May's Brexit deal lost by in the House of Commons. What comes next?
Yes, so that was the number of last night, and we're bracing for another tense and late night in the House of Commons in Westminster this evening, as the catastrophic defeat for Theresa May last night you just mentioned has now triggered a vote of a confidence vote in her government brought by opposition leader Jeremy Corbyn. That's going to take place after a long debate this afternoon at 7 o'clock local time this evening.
And what are the chances of that confidence vote going Corbyn's way?
It's pretty tight. It's unlikely he's going to win it, because we heard rumblings last night that both the Brexiteers and the Tory party and the DUP party that props up Theresa May's minority government would both probably vote for her government in this instance. However, it's very, very tight that she has such a slim majority with those DUP votes that if just a couple of people go the other way, or if people in her own party, more than 100 of whom voted against her in last night's vote, decide that, you know, it's time for a change, you know, it's all really down to the wire.
Bloomberg News Senior Executive Editor Heather Harris joining us from our London Bureau. Thank you for that briefing. Now I want to bring in Christina Hooper. She's Chief Global Market Strategist at Invesco. Thanks for being here, Christina. I want to get your reaction to the apparently muted market reaction to the Brexit result here.
Well, it was a fait accompli. Many expected, although I don't think they expected such a big defeat for this particular bill, but it was expected nonetheless. And markets seem to be more focused on the potential for more central bank stimulus. Very encouraging words from Mario Draghi yesterday, as well as some encouragement from China, which continues to promise to increase stimulus and support growth.
So that puts Brexit, at least for market participants, on the back burner, would you say, at this point?
Yes, I think it does. While certainly there are issues ahead, one could view that yesterday's defeat as something of a positive. I believe it actually decreases the likelihood of a crash out and increases the likelihood of a softer Brexit or even perhaps a Remain.
Now, at the same time, though, I mean, there's a great deal of uncertainty as to, I guess, what the what Brexit itself could look like, whether, you know, whether the UK crashes out or comes in for a soft landing here, don't you think?
Certainly. And it increases the prospect of pushing out Article 50, which, of course, many view as a negative just because it creates economic policy uncertainty for longer. But all in all, there are certainly some relatively positive options for the UK going forward.
Now, you say the central bank outlook is looking a lot more positive. I wonder whether we're going to see market reaction at any point to the partial government shutdown. It's been going on nearly a month now, and we haven't really seen much of that at this point.
You're right. Well, it's been a slow bleed, but at some point it will have an impact. It may take a downgrade of U.S. debt to get us there, but at some point it will have an impact, and I think it's going to happen sooner rather than later as the market begins to complicate all the ramifications of this shutdown. And they are significant, including what could happen to air travel with the TSA being unpaid.
So do you think that the market hasn't quite priced in the impact of the shutdown at this point? I mean, we've started to see at least some impacts trickling through outside the market, I mean.
Well, even the White House hasn't fully priced in the impact on the economy. It came back out and revised its numbers in terms of the impact on economic growth. So one can imagine that markets that lack some of the transparency that the U.S. government does in terms of all the agencies and departments that are affected, it might take time to actually factor that all in by markets.
Is it going to be more difficult for markets to factor in some of the issues that are dealt with by the shutdown, given the fact that many of the agencies that put out economic data aren't open right now?
That's a great point. And yes, that is going to be a significant issue going forward. Central bankers in the U.S. are going to be flying blind, as well as economists, because we're just not going to get that same level of data.
In our last 30 seconds or so here, is there an opportunity to take advantage of the unpredictability that, you know, so many factors are bringing into this market?
Well, yes, there is. And interestingly, there's still something of a risk on environment. And so this is a time for investors to have a shopping list and look at different asset classes that they're excited about. And when we see prices move lower, taking advantage of that opportunity. This is an interesting environment, and I think it's actually going to be a positive one this year because we have the opportunity for central banks to be more supportive, or at least in the case of the Fed, taking its foot off the accelerator.
Oh, we'll have to go over that shopping shopping list next time we have you on. Christina Hooper, Chief Global Market Strategist at Invesco. Thanks for, again, for being here on Bloomberg Daybreak, a morning where futures are pointing to a higher open. This is Bloomberg. It's 525 on Wall Street. Bloomberg Daybreak is brought to you by Land Rover. Visit your tri-state area Land Rover retailer for special lease and finance offers. Land Rover above and beyond.
Broadcasting live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studio in New York.
Bloomberg 1130
to Washington, D.C.
Bloomberg 991
to Boston.
Bloomberg 1061
to San Francisco.
Bloomberg 960
to the country.
Sirius XM Channel 119
and around the globe.
The Bloomberg Business App and BloombergRadio.com.
This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
And it's 5:30 on Wall Street. Good morning. I'm Nathan Hager.
And I'm Karen Moscow. We are just about 4 hours away from the opening of U.S. trading. Let's get you up to date on the news you need to know at this hour. We begin with Brexit. Stocks are down more than 0.5% in London after the biggest defeat for any government in modern history. It leaves Prime Minister Theresa May's exit agreement with the EU all but dead, while opposition leader Jeremy Corbyn tries to force a general election. John Raith is head of UK rates strategy and economics at UBS.
Either you're going to get no deal or you're going to get a second referendum. And I think if you end up where that is a sort of imminent decision facing MPs, they will opt for a second referendum for sure rather than allowing no deal to happen.
The next hurdle for Theresa May is a no confidence vote today in Parliament.
Annual car sales in Europe dropped for the first time since 2013. They were led lower by a sagging UK market where concerns over Brexit turned off consumers.
The People's Bank of China has injected a net $83 billion into the financial system through open market operations. Bloomberg Daybreak Asia anchor Brian Curtis reports from Hong Kong.
It was the biggest one-day addition on record. The massive injection was essentially to meet seasonal demand for cash due to tax payments and major holidays, January being the peak season for tax payments, and then there's the week-long Lunar New Year holiday that begins early next month. The injection also helps the central bank in its plan to reduce banks' funding costs. In Hong Kong, Brian Curtis, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Brian, thanks. Well, here in the U.S., bank earnings continue today with reports from Bank of America and Goldman Sachs. Ken Leon directs research at CFRA. He recently downgraded B of A from buy to hold.
Bank of America had a weak investment bank performance. Hopefully they'll do better in Q4. They're doing extremely well in terms of commercial and consumer loans. They don't have the global risks.
Bank of America results are due out around 6:45 a.m. Wall Street time, while Goldman's earnings are expected at 7:30.
Shares of Snap are down 9.5%. The social media company's chief financial officer, Tim Stone, is resigning after just 8 months on the job.
And Sears chairman Eddie Lampert has won a bankruptcy auction to keep the department store chain in business. Bloomberg News has learned Lampert's improved offers, valued at more than $5 billion, and could preserve tens of thousands of jobs.
Now let's get you up to date on how stocks are faring. S&P futures up 6.5 points. Dow futures up 68. NASDAQ futures up 4. The DAX in Germany is up less than 0.1%. 10-year Treasury down 7/32, yield 2.73%. The yield on the 2-year, 2.54%. And straight ahead, we have the latest world and national news. And this is Bloomberg.
All right. Thank you, Karen. It is 5:33 on Wall Street. Michael Barr is here to tell us what's going on in the world. Michael.
Thank you very much, Nathan. President Trump's choice to be attorney general will face a second day of questions during Senate confirmation hearings. On the first day, William Barr pledged to protect the federal probe into election meddling and said he would not be bullied into doing anything wrong. Barr also told senators his independence would be worth his job.
If the president directs an attorney general to do something that is contrary to law, then I think the attorney general has to step down.
The Trump administration has ordered thousands of furloughed federal employees back to work without pay to inspect planes, issue tax refunds, monitor food safety, and facilitate the sale of offshore oil drilling rights. Meanwhile, Americans may get their refunds during the shutdown, but the upcoming tax filing season is likely to be one of the rockiest as the IRS grapples with a major tax overhaul with limited staff. The IRS will have about 57% of its workers in the coming days. It looks like as if Wall Street may be getting a lot more scrutiny from the House Financial Services Committee. Bloomberg's Ed Baxter has the story.
It looks very much as if the committee will be getting some recently elected progressives led by Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, the 29-year-old from the Bronx who has called for the biggest banks to be broken up. The steering committee has recommended her along with Rashida Tlaib of Michigan and Katie Porter of California. Representative Maxine Waters will head the panel. It will be a different world there. In San Francisco, I'm Ed Baxter, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Kenya's president says security forces ended an attack on an office complex in Nairobi by suspected Islamist militants that left at least 14 people dead. President Uhuru Kenyatta says all of the assailants were killed.
We will seek out every person that was involved in the funding, planning, and execution of this heinous act.
Governor Andrew Cuomo unveiled a plan to make stretch limousines illegal in New York. During his annual State of the State address, Cuomo also says he wants to give more power to state regulators to keep unsafe vehicles off the road. It comes after 20 people were killed in October after a stretch SUV lost control and slammed into another vehicle in Schoharie. Cuomo also called upon the state legislature to revamp the leadership of the MTA, saying its governing structure has made the subway and bus operator dysfunctional. The governor also called for sports betting to be legal in four upstate casinos within 100 days. Global News, 24 hours a day, on air and at TikTok on Twitter. Powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Michael, thank you. It is coming up on 5:36 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update with John Stashout.
Nathan, all three local hockey teams were on the ice, two at home. They both won. The Rangers with their first win at the Garden in nearly a month, 6-2 over Carolina. Half the goals came on the power play. Mika Zibanejad with 2 goals, 2 assists. Tony D'Angelo and Pavel Buchnevich also scored twice, just the Blueshirts' second win in the last 8 games. The Islanders made it 9 wins in their last 11, 12 of 15, 2-1 over St. Louis on a Vetteri Filppula goal at 137 of overtime. Devils in Columbus lost 4-1. NBA, Golden State walloped Denver 142-111. The Warriors set a record with 51 points in the first quarter. They've won 5 straight. They're back in their familiar spot atop the Western Conference. Nets are in Houston tonight. The Knicks play Washington tomorrow in London. College basketball, Seton Hall lost at Providence. Rutgers got blown out at Purdue. Fordham beaten by St. Louis. Upset at the Australian Open, 20-year-old American Francis Tiafoe took out the 5th seed, Kevin Anderson. The Jets are on the verge of hiring Greg Williams to be their defensive coordinator. He's been in the NFL nearly 30 years. He once was suspended a year for his part in that Bounty Gate scandal in New Orleans. Was last Sunday Nick Foles' last game in Philadelphia. The Eagles general manager Howie Roseman.
We would love to keep Nick Foles. I mean, you talk about a guy who we drafted here and we've grown incredibly close with. I mean, I don't know a team that wouldn't want to have Nick Foles on their roster. Certainly, as we go into the substance of those discussions, we haven't had them yet, but there's no question we love having Nick Foles as an Eagle in Philadelphia, and we'd love to keep him.
Let it be as a backup quarterback. The Eagles insist Carson Wentz, when healthy, is still the starter. With the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update, I'm John Stashower. Nathan?
Thanks, John. It's 5:37 on Wall Street. The latest edition of Bloomberg Business Week is on newsstands now. The cover is on ZTE, the Chinese telecom that President Trump spared. Also in this week's issue, the new challenges ahead for Nancy Pelosi in Washington. Anna Edgerton wrote the story for Bloomberg Business Week.
She's Speaker of the House again, and there's a very different Washington. You have a president who tweets policy announcements, opinions, political attacks, but she also has freshman members of her conference, of her caucus, that also tweet their opinion and are not shy about tweeting their criticism about whatever piece of legislation or movement the Democratic Party is working on. So it's going to be a very different way that she's going to have to employ the skills she honed before.
You can read more about this and other stories in this week's edition of Bloomberg Business Week. Know what matters and why. Visit businessweek.com or pick up a copy of the magazine on newsstands now. And listen to Business Week with Carol Masser and Jason Kelly weekdays at 2 p.m. Wall Street time on Bloomberg Radio. 5:38 on Wall Street, time for the Tri-State Business Report with Bloomberg's Ed Curry.
Good morning, Nathan. Democratic governors of New York and New Jersey have each set goals to legalize recreational marijuana as part of their 2019 agendas. In separate State of the State speeches Tuesday, they declared new laws should raise state revenue and address past criminal and economic injustice. New York City's Tourism Marketing Agency will announce today the number of visitors to the city rose to a record 65.2 million in 2018. A major lobster company shutting down its Connecticut facility this week and shifting work to its other operations in the Northeast. The Groton facility is part of Garbo Lobster, which bills itself as the biggest wholesale distributor of live lobsters in the world. That's your Bloomberg Tri-State Business Report. I'm Ed Corey. Nathan?
Ed, thanks. It's 5:39 on Wall Street. Bloomberg Radio is on the air from San Francisco to New York, London to Hong Kong. Let's check in with our global news team for some of the top stories heard on our 300 affiliate radio stations around the world.
I'm Steve Potusk, and on KYW in Philadelphia, we're following quarterly results from PNC Financial.
I'm Courtney Donahoe on KFAB in Omaha. Green Plains is looking to sell more ethanol plants as the Nebraska company shifts its strategy.
I'm Marcus Carlson on Bloomberg DAB Digital Radio in London. We follow the fallout of Theresa May's historic Brexit defeat in the UK Parliament.
I'm Gina Cervetti, and for WBBM in Chicago, I'm talking about Sears. Chairman Eddie Lampert is said to have won a bankruptcy auction for the retailer with a plan to keep it in business and seek to save tens of thousands of jobs.
I'm Ed Corey. On WWJ in Detroit, I'm reporting Ford plans to replace its best-selling Escape crossover.
And those are some of the stories our 2,700 Bloomberg journalists and analysts are working on this morning around the world. Morning pointing to gains on Wall Street at the open. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. Good morning. Bloomberg Daybreak is brought to you by Fairleigh Dickinson University, Silberman College of Business, offering an executive MBA and a blended Saturday MBA that combines online and on-campus classes. Visit fdugrad.org/radio.
Global news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at TikTok on Twitter. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. Stocks in Europe are higher alongside U.S. stock index futures as investors assess prospects for policymakers to arrest a slowdown in global growth. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. Right now, S&P futures are up 5 points, Dow futures up 53, and NASDAQ futures little changed. The DAX in Germany little changed as well, down less than a tenth of a percent. CAC in Paris is up 0.2%. 10-year Treasury down 7/32, yield 2.73%. The yield on the 2-year, 2.54%. NYMEX crude oil down 0.3% or 16 cents to $51.97 a barrel. COMEX gold is up 0.1%, up $1.20 to $12.89.60 an ounce. The euro, $1.1406, and the yen, 108.77. Home sales in the U.S. slumped 11% in December, while the median home price inched up 1.2%, marking the smallest annual increase since the end of the last housing crash in 2012. That, according to data from brokerage Redfin. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Karen, it is day 26 of the partial government shutdown with no deal in sight. Yesterday, President Trump invited both Democratic and Republican members of Congress to meet with him at the White House to talk about the shutdown. However, Democrats turned down the offer. Two Republican U.S. lawmakers are hoping to break the impasse over President Trump's demand for money to build a wall along the Mexican border. Representative Steve Palazzo of Mississippi and Andy Harris of Maryland, both members of the House Appropriations Committee, introduced a Border Bonds for America Act of 2019, a law that would allow Americans to buy such securities from the U.S. The money would be put in a trust fund and used just to build the wall. In the NHL, the Islanders won in overtime. The Rangers won. The Devils lost along with the Capitals. NBA action, the Warriors won. Global news 24 hours a day on air and at TikTok on Twitter. Powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Michael, thank you. We are live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios where it's 5:49 on Wall Street. Time to check in with Bloomberg Opinion, our platform offering informed perspectives on a range of global topics, expert data-driven commentary on breaking news. Bloomberg Opinion editor Jennifer Ryan joins us from our London bureau with a focus, perhaps not surprisingly, on Brexit this morning. Therese Raphael writes, Jen, Theresa May's humbling offers a glimmer of hope. She says the Brexit deal was supposed to be the meaningful vote in Parliament, but it's turned out to be anything but.
That's right. So what Raphael argues is that Tuesday's ballot was all about tactics because there wasn't a single MP that thought it was actually going to decide anything. And then as the Prime Minister herself noted afterwards, what yesterday's result shows is that it's clear what Parliament doesn't want, but it doesn't show you what alternative could potentially gather a majority among lawmakers. So now all the factions are even more entrenched. So where are we? We've got Remainers that are largely divided between those who want a second referendum and those who support a cross-party deal to keep Britain perhaps in the EU's customs union or a single market. But the problem with this latter camp is that they gloss over the fact that their own options would require allowing the free movement of people. And there's one thing that you could say that Brexiters wanted in the referendum, that they wanted to end that free movement of people.
So where does that leave the former camp and the prospects for a second referendum?
Well, if you think about the MPs holding out for a second referendum, these same people would actually be horrified at the idea of crashing out of the EU without an agreement. But it's really hard to imagine a referendum that would be supported by Parliament without a no-deal option on the table, because who's to say that this economically catastrophic outcome might not win?
And as it turns out, I mean, the way this defeat went down, many Brexiteers voted for a plan that would ultimately deliver Brexit. How did we get here?
Yeah, it's really curious because, you know, whatever voters had in mind in June 2016 when they cast their ballots, the arguments and the discussions have changed. And so now we're at this point where delivering Brexit has become this kind of zero-sum game of multiple competing tribes in Parliament. So you've got the hard Brexiters, you've got the second referendum crowd, you've got the general election-seeking Labour Party. And so each has to defeat the other's preferred option in order to advance their own views. And this is what's taken the country to the brink of leaving the EU without a negotiated settlement.
Yeah, so with all that said, what comes next?
Well, Theresa May has promised to reach out to the other parties in a constructive spirit and find a solution that has some broad support. I mean, you would be forgiven for thinking that she could have started out with this, given that the split in the referendum was merely 52-48. But, you know, the pound seems to like this, and it's rising against the dollar because there's an idea that this more humble approach will rule out a no-deal Brexit. But now we've got the Labour Party, which has tabled a no-confidence motion. If it loses this, its stated policy requires it to support a second referendum. But Jeremy Corbyn, the leader of the Labour Party, has resisted this. So where are we? Britain's political elite is finally, after years of time-wasting and grandstanding, starting to grasp that Brexit is indeed incredibly complex. And now the clock really is ticking on a no-deal Brexit.
Yeah, and Mihir Sharma, in his piece, is arguing that the clock is ticking perhaps toward a no-deal Brexit. He says many Britons don't seem to understand that.
Yeah, he looks at the decision to withdraw from the EU as revealing a kind of basic inability to grasp Britain's vastly diminished place in the world. Europe is not short of former imperial powers that have adjusted to this, and the UK really seems to be struggling here.
Yeah, why does the fantasy of imperial power seem to cling on in the UK?
I mean, Sharma's piece pushes aside this idea that it stems from, you know, its role on the UN Security Council, that it's got a nuclear weapon. It's really to do with Britain's role in the empire of finance. And that power rests on its status as a gateway to the EU. But weirdly, its power has also given it the confidence to undercut its attachment to the EU.
Fascinating stuff, as always. Bloomberg Opinion Editor Jennifer Ryan, thanks for being here. Read more about this and other stories from Bloomberg Opinion at Bloomberg.com/opinion on the Bloomberg Terminal. Type OPIN. Go. Karen?
Nathan, thank you. 5:53 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg Law Report, brought to you by the American Arbitration Association. Business disputes are inevitable. Resolve faster with the American Arbitration Association, the global leader in alternative dispute resolution for over 90 years. More at ADR.org. Let's get to the legal stories we're watching this morning with Steve Podisk in the Bloomberg 99.1 Washington Newsroom.
The federal judiciary has revised its funding outlook amid cost-cutting driven by the partial government shutdown and can continue present operations through January 25th. The FDA expects to approve 10 to 20 cell and gene therapy products a year within the next 6 years and is hiring 50 more clinical reviewers to make it happen. And the scores of law firms that have worked for California utility Pacific Gas and Electric may find payments they've already received subject to clawbacks in a bankruptcy and could be among the last creditors paid for what they're still owed.
Bloomberg Law. Everything you need, all on one legal research platform, including guidance, analysis, and Bloomberg Market Intelligence. Find out more at BloombergLaw.com.
All right, Steve, thank you. Now, in other legal news, a federal judge has blocked the Trump administration's plan to put a question about citizenship on the 2020 census. But the Supreme Court may have the last word when it hears an appeal related to the trial in February. For more on this story, Bloomberg's June Grasso speaks to Thomas Wolf, counsel with the Brennan Center's Democracy Program.
We know that under federal law, in this case it's the Administrative Procedure Act, agencies are supposed to have rational, intelligent, evidence-based, and logical reasons for making the decisions they make when they exercise their power, and that they make all of those decisions clear in their representations to the public. What Judge Furman said was, if you look at the paperwork on all of the decisions made by Secretary Ross to add the citizenship question, he flew in the face of the evidence that his own agency at the Census Bureau had compiled. He created a pretext for adding the question, meaning the reason why he claimed he added the question wasn't the real reason he added the question, and that he violated all of these different rules that are put in place to make sure that when the government makes decisions on our behalf, it makes them on the basis of clear evidence, and they violated all of those rules.
Did the judge specifically address the plaintiff's claim and the claim of advocates that the real intent of the question was to intimidate illegal immigrants from answering and depress their official numbers in the census?
What Judge Furman noted on that point was that there's still an open question about why Secretary Ross ultimately decided to add the citizenship question. Secretary Ross claimed that the reason why he was doing it was to help enforcement of the Voting Rights Act. But the evidence showed that that clearly was not the reason why he decided to make that decision. In fact, that was pure pretext, and Judge Furman described that as a sort of laundering of some other intent. What Judge Furman noted, though, was that there wasn't enough evidence in the record to conclude that the question was added for discriminatory purposes. At the same time, though, he said had the plaintiffs been able to depose Secretary Ross, that is, get him up on the stand and ask him questions under oath, they might have been able to get at the real reason. So the gist of it is, on the basis of Judge Furman's opinion, that we don't know exactly why the Census Bureau decided to add this question, and specifically Secretary Ross decided to add this question, but it certainly is not because of any interest in enforcing the Voting Rights Act.
That's Thomas Wolf, counsel with the Brennan Center's Democracy Program, speaking with Bloomberg's June Grasso. You can listen to more legal analysis like this on Bloomberg Politics, Policy, Power, and Law, weekdays at 12 p.m. Wall Street time here on Bloomberg Radio, and find more legal news at BloombergLaw.com. Attorneys will find exceptional legal research and business development tools there as well. Visit BloombergLaw.com. For more information. S&P futures up about 5 points this morning. Dow futures up 51 and NASDAQ futures are little changed. 10-year Treasury down 8/32, yield 2.74%, and the euro at $1.14. Bloomberg Daybreak continues. This is Bloomberg.